The shiur tonight is titled The Rule of Herod and the End of the Chashmoneim. So let's start with some historical background from last week's shiur. So basically the history is that last week we went through a civil war between the sons of Alexander Yanai, who was of the Chashmonai descent, and his wife was Shlomtzion Amalka, if we all remember, which we probably don't. And she was a ruler, and everything was stable, and she was a great ruler. But then afterwards, the two sons, Hyrcanus II and Aristobulus, had a civil war. And at first, Hyrcanus was in control, and then Aristobulus took control. So Hyrcanus, what happened was, Hyrcanus, he ends up joining up with this Idumean non-Jew named Antipater. And Antipater, in exchange, ends up ruling, and he gives his sons Fazael, he was in control of one area in Eretz Yisrael, and the other son, his name was Herod, and he was in control of the other region. So lo and behold, Aristobulus's son, whose name was, it's a little complicated, but his name was Matithiahu Antigonus, he wants to get revenge for his father being killed by his uncle. So he ends up cutting his uncle's ear off. He kills Fazael, who is the son of Antipater, the ally of Hyrcanus, his uncle. And Herod escapes to Rome. And in Rome, Herod is friends with the Roman government, and they proclaim him to be the leader and ruler of Eretz Yisrael. So for a brief period of time, the son of Aristobulus, Antigonus, Matithiahu Antigonus, was in control of Eretz Yisrael. And then this Herod, he comes back with all these Roman soldiers, and it takes about 3 years, but he ends up destroying the Chashmoneim, and he destroys the kingship and the kingdom of the Chashmoneim, because Antigonus, Matithiahu Antigonus, was the last of the Chashmonai rulers. So Herod, he's really reliant on the Romans to support him, and that's the only reason why he was able to destroy Antigonus, Matithiahu Antigonus. And what ends up happening with Herod, he's an interesting fellow. So Herod, he marries one of the Chashmonai women named Miriam. But what ends up happening is that once he marries Miriam, there's a lot of people are upset about that, including his mother-in-law, Miriam's mother, and also Hyrcanus. So Herod figures out, and also, if you're not too confused, is that Herod also, he wanted to become friends with the Essenes, which were a group that was did not follow Torah Shabbat Peh. So he ends up appointing a Kohen Gadol from the Essenes, who was a Kofar, and his name was Hananel. So after Herod marries Miriam, this Chashmonai woman, so she wants her brother to be the Kohen Gadol, and her mother also was upset about this whole union. So what ends up happening is Herod figures out a way to kill off each one of them. So he ends up drowns his brother-in-law. Somehow he drowns him. He ends up killing his Hyrcanus, and he ends up also killing his mother-in-law. So he's a nice guy. And so Herod was pretty much an evil person, but we're going to look at the Gemaras on Herod. And just to give you some context, the time period was 37 BCE, which was before the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. And it was actually a time where Hillel and Shammai were the Zugs, were the pairs. But we're not going to discuss Hillel and Shammai tonight. We'll discuss it next week because there's some interesting Gemara. There's an interesting Gemara on Herod to analyze his personality and what he was like. So one of the good things about Herod, actually, was that while he was ruler, he did end up, we'll see that he ended up building a lot. There's a lot of building in the time of Herod, and we'll see why that's the case. So hopefully everyone grasps that historical background. So we're up to the period of Herod, 37 BCE, and the Gemara in Bava Basra, Daf Gimel Amud Beis, gives us an interesting take and interesting insight into Herod. So let's start with source number one, if you have the source sheets. And it goes as follows. Hordus of the Beis Chashmonai Hava. So Hordus was actually a slave of the Chashmonaim, in the house of the Chashmonaim. That's how he initially, he was a slave. This is the story of the Gemara. Nasan Enav Be'osa Tinokes. So he had a thing for this girl, this young girl, who's a Chashmonai girl. So Yom Echad, this is Miriam, supposedly. So Yom Echad, so one day, Shama Hu Gavra Bas Kala. So one day, Herod heard a baskel to Amar, and it said, Kol Abda Demarid Hashta Mitzlach. So any slave who ends up rebelling at this moment will be successful. So Herod, of course, he listens to the baskel, and it says, Kom Katlinu L'chulu Merusei. He kills all the Chashmonaim who were his masters, Vishaira Lahi Yanukta. And the only one left was this young girl. Ki Chazas Hahi Yanukta De Kaboi Leminsiva. When this young girl, Chashmonai girl, saw that Herod wanted to marry her, she was mortified. Slika L'Igra V'Roma Kala. She went up to the roof and she said out loud, Amra, Kol Ma D'Asiv Amar Ribeis Chashmonai Ka'asina Avdehu. Anyone who says that they're from the house of the Chashmonaim is an Eved, is a slave. Delo ishtarya minayhu elahi yanukta. Because the last remaining Chashmonai was this one woman, Miriam. Vahi yanukta nafla m'igra la'ara. So this girl, she killed herself. So the history is not so consistent with the Gemara. In the history, he married Miriam. In this, the Gemara says that he killed all of the slaves. So we'll go with the Gemara's version. He killed all the slaves, and there was this young girl who was left, and she goes up to the roof, and she says, anyone who's from the Chashmonaim is an Eved, because she was the last one from the Chashmonaim. But he anukta nafla me'igral ara. And she jumped off the roof, and she killed herself. So what was Herod's reaction? Normal reaction. Tamna sheva shnin bedusha. So he took her body and he decided to preserve it in honey, because apparently honey is a good way to preserve a body. Ika de amri ba'aleha. So some say that he preserved the body for 7 years, and he was having bia, he was having relations with the body. So ika de amri lo ba'aleha. But the other side is more gracious to Herod and says no, he didn't have bia with her. De amri la ba'aleha. So the side that holds that he was having bia with her, he was having relations with her, why did he preserve her body? So that he could satisfy his carnal desires. But according to the one who said he didn't, so why did he preserve her? In order that everyone say that he married a daughter of a king. Okay, so this is an interesting story and very fascinating to me. But there's a couple of questions that I want to address in this year, hopefully. One question is this baskol. It's a strange baskol. Why is there a hashgacha, seemingly, that Herod should rise up and destroy his masters? So where does that hashgacha, or what's the reasoning for that hashgacha? Can we explain that? And then furthermore, what's the whole deal with the obvious question, the deal with the honey? So the machlokas is whether or not he preserved her body in honey to have relations with her, necrophilia, or no, he just preserved her so that people would say that he married the daughter of a king. So what's that machlokas, and what kind of strange reaction was that of Herod? So those are the questions that we have. So question one is, again, why is there hashgacha that Herod should be able to destroy the Chashmonai dynasty? And question two is, what is the machlokas and what's the concept behind Herod preserving the body of this young Chashmonai woman who killed herself in honey in order to either have relations or to preserve her so that people would say that he married the Bas Melech? So strange story. So let's go through some factual issues, some historical issues, because technically this is a Jewish history / Gemara shiur. And then we'll come back to this Gemara and try to define it with Svara. So if you look in the Tosfos on this daf, look in source number 2. So she said, Kol da'amar Rabbeish Chashmonai Asina Avdahu. So she said that anyone in the future who says that they're a Chashmonai and they're from that Zera, from that lineage, is actually an Eved. They have to be a slave, like Herod, who is a slave. V'chein hu da'hachi nami amar Shmuel v'perak asar yuchsin. So Shmuel agrees, and he says the same thing in Kiddushin. Umikan kasha al perish hakuntras be'elu ne'amar. But there's a kasha on Rashi and Sota. De Amar, Amru lo Agrippus. So they said to Agrippus, who is a descendant of Herod, and they were doing Hakel, we'll see. Achinu ata, they said, you're our brethren. So Uperish Akuntros Hasam, she Amru lo Achinu, Lefisha Haisa Imo mi Yisrael. And the reason that they call him our brethren is because the mother, his mother, was really a Yisraelis, was a Jewish woman. And we know that a Jewish woman, the Imkain, Keva de Bnei Hordus Nasu Yisraelis, since the children of Herod married Jewish women, Amai Avdahava, why would Agrippus be considered an Eved who is of the lineage or claimed to be the lineage of the Chashmonaim? Hashmuel Gufe Isle Oviku Chavim the Eved Abal Bas Yisrael Vlad Kasher. Because we know the halacha is that if a non-Jew has relations with a Jewish woman or an Eved, the boy, the son, is a full-fledged Jew. So why do they call him, or why? What does it mean that anyone who came from the house of Chashmonai is an Eved, seemingly Agrippus, because we'll see that Herod claimed that he was Chashmonai because of this woman, Miriam, and because of his preservation. But he wasn't an Eved, he was really just a regular Jew. So the answer is, the Tzarech Lomar, Shalom Nasu Yisraelis, V'karu Achinu Ata, Lefisha Eved Achinu B'mitzvos. So the answer is that he wasn't the child of a Jewish woman. They just called him Achinu because an Eved, we know an Eved, is Chayv in some mitzvos. So they're basically saying that you're like our brethren, not in the sense that you're Jewish, but in the sense that an Eved is Chayv in mitzvos, just like you're Chayv in mitzvos, we're Chayv in mitzvos. So just to clarify, Agrippus, again, was one of the descendants of Herod, who claimed that he was part of the Chashmonai dynasty. But this, in this story, the girl that killed herself says, no, anybody who says that they're from the Chashmonai dynasty is really a slave, and they really emerged from Herod, and they have no relation. So this king Agrippus, let's look in the Gemara. Look in source number 3. Agrippus Amelech Amad V'Kibel V'Kara Omid. So he accepted the Torah, and he was reading the Torah by Hakel. V'shavchu achachamim, and the chachamim praised him. Ukshigia lelotucha lasis alecha ish nachri, when he was reading the pasuk that said that a non-Jew can't be a king over the Jews. Zalgu einav demos, he was crying. Amrulo altis yare Agrippus, achinu ata, achinu ata. So the chazal said to him, don't worry, Agrippus, you're a brother. So Rashi says over there, Agrippus amelech, melech Yisrael haya mizara shel Hordus. He was of the lineage of Herod, who's what we're talking about in the beginning of this year. So he was the lineage. Zalguin of Demosh, Amikra Zeb, Poslomin Amalchus. Obviously, he was crying because he saw from this pasuk that he wasn't Roy, he wasn't allowed to be the king. So they said, Achinu Ata, She'imo mi Yisrael. They said, no, your mother's Yisrael. So Tosus argues with that again, and it's machlokas whether or not the mother was a Yisraelis or not. But nevertheless, the point is that, according to Tosus at least, all of the lineage of Herod were all considered Avadim, because they emerged from Herod, and there was no Jewish women and no Jewish lineage in that. So look at the Marsha as to what happened here. He gives a different explanation a little bit, and then we'll come back to our Gemara. So the Marsha says, Ukshigia lo suchal amar le altis yare Agrippus, ikar alav lo suchal lemimanin oso ne'amar. So lo suchal is, you're not allowed to appoint a king who's a non-Jew. Aval kein amru lo, don't worry that we're not going to rebel against you, Bishvil Zeb, because of this. But you're our brother. So really, they just said that because they were trying to flatter him, and so that he wouldn't kill them. But really, and they said, Achinu Ata, you're our brethren. But really, he wasn't Roy, even if his mother was Jewish, because if your father's not Jewish, you certainly can't be the king of the Jews, the Jewish people. So that's a little peek into the future as to what happened to Herod, and we'll get to it in more detail in the future. But it just shows you that from our Gemara we see that all the lineage of Herod were now considered slaves, and they really had no relationship to the Chashmonaim. So let's go back to our Gemara. So yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Who appointed him king? Well, he was a descendant of Herod, so it was basically father to son. So it wasn't the Jewish people that appointed him. It started with the Romans who appointed Herod, And Herod had killed, again, at the beginning of this year, Herod had killed Antigonus, Matisyahu Antigonus, who is the son of Aristobulus, the last Chashmonei Melech. And once Herod was in control, so all of his descendants took control from, based on Herod's rule and supported by the Romans. All right?
So it's really not that he was over in Avera, in other words, it wasn't a system of halacha taking place then, right?
No, yeah, he wasn't over in Avera. It's just that he was upset, and we'll see why. I'll try to define it a little bit, but he was upset that he wasn't a legitimate melech. He wasn't really a legitimate king because he couldn't be appointed as melech of Israel. He wasn't a legitimate Jewish king. Okay, so let's go back to our Gemara. Good question. And then we'll try to give a svara. So if you look at the Marsha adds one more interesting aspect, element, that we can raise a question on. And then we can start answering some of the perplexing issues with the Gemara before. So the Marsha in source number 6 says, V'shiyari lahi yanukta kad chazas dekabay l'mintzva. So this woman, this girl, Chashmonai girl, she was terrified of having to marry Herod, so she kills herself. And she says, anyone who comes from the house must be a slave. House of Chashmonai. Nira shedikdik leminsaval, lefisha evet shall be Chashmonai haya. So why was it so important that he marry her? Because he was a slave in the Beis Chashmonai. Velo nishtachar adayin. But he was never freed, even though he killed his masters, he was never freed. He never got a get shechur, a dayin. V'chevan dekat al kulon. Once he killed everyone, nimtza shenish or eved shalhu yanukta. So it turned out that he was really the slave of this girl because she was the last chashmonai, and I guess the slave goes through Yerusha to this girl. V'im nasa hava nishtachur memela. And if he married her, then he would be freed memela. K'dam rinon v'perakash aleach v'adon shenose shivchasa v'hu adin behefech b'isha shenisei la'avda. So when an Ado marries a Shivcha, or if an Eved marries, an Isha marries an Eved, they become free intrinsically. So this is bizarre, according to the Marsha. It's bizarre. Why? Because he's killing all these people. He's killing his masters. He's killing the Chashmonaim, and he's worried about not being free as a slave, halachically. Like, why does he care about that? You think that the guy is basically, he's a king, and he's destroying his masters, and yet he feels like he's not freed. He won't be freed until he marries this woman. So like, what kind of svara, what kind of idea is that about Herod? It's strange. You'd think that he wouldn't care because he's obviously able to show his might and show that he's a king. And why does he care? Okay, fine. So last point, and then we'll define it. I think I'm giving away the svara. I don't think it's so deep, but I think I'm giving it away through hints here, from Muslim. So in source number 7, it says, Kol damar beis chashmonai ana av evedu. Shekol zaro hargam hordus. The eved haya umelech tachtein, umelech tachtein. So all the lineage of the chashmonaim Herod destroyed, and he was the king after. The karabana vashem beis chashmonai. So he kept referring to him, referring to himself and his children as chashmonaim. Umistaba la benos yisrael nasiv, nizharim heim lahasi benosam la avadim, vahavalhu kulam avadim. So really, in truth, they were all marrying avadim, and they really were slaves. It's just that Herod was trying to call his himself and his lineage based from the base Chashmonai, from the house of the Chashmonai. So let's try to explain what's going on here. What's the idea? We're gonna get to the idea of the hashgacha. That was one question. What's the hashgacha? The baskol. It seems like there's hashgacha for Herod to rise up and destroy the Chashmonai. But the second part, so he ends up preserving this woman's body in Devash, and there's a machlokas as to whether he's doing it for necrophilia purposes, or he's just preserving it to say that he's married to her. And then the last point is that he's insistent that he married this girl because he wants to be freed halachically. So what kind of idea is that? So I think the answer is kind of obvious. I think the idea is from Herod's background that he clearly had this chip on his shoulder, inferiority complex, due to the fact that he was a slave and he wasn't naturally a melech, he wasn't naturally king. He didn't have any lineage or any type of genetics of kingship. He was just a lowly slave. And you see from his actions that he's acting in a way where he has to rebel against that sense that he's really a slave. And he's constantly trying to deny his initial state as being a slave. He's overcoming this massive insecurity. So that seems to be the idea why he was so insistent on marrying this girl. Because even though, despite the fact that he didn't really need to marry her, he wasn't careful about halacha. He didn't care. He was killing people. He was killing the Chashmonaim. But it was an idea. It was a psychological idea that really he wanted to marry this girl because he had to convince himself that he wasn't really a slave, that he was really worthy of being a melech. And that was really the motivation of marrying into the Chashmonaim and calling his children the Chashmonaim. Even though he was an Eved, he couldn't accept the fact that he was really an Eved, and he was trying to deny his Avdus, his basic Avdus status. And so what's the idea of the Devash, the actual idea of preserving this girl and this woman in Devash and honey in order to either have Bia with her or to say that he married the queen, that he married a Bas Melech? So the idea of necrophilia, at least from my research, is that it's the concept of a person being with somebody who can't reject them, and that's the idea of necrophilia. Having relations with a corpse is that you're having relations with someone who can't reject you, who's incapable of rejecting you. So one side is saying that really you see from his actions that he really couldn't accept the fact that that he wasn't from the Beis Chashmonai, and he needed someone, or he needed to affirm that. And the way to affirm that was to have this woman who wouldn't reject him, this woman who was from the Beis Chashmonai. And it's just an idea in the self-esteem of the person. The self-esteem of the person is typically a low self-esteem if they're having Bia, because they're fearful and they think that really anyone would reject them. So that's why they're willing to go ahead and they're attracted to the corpse. So the one side is saying that really the motive of Herod was based on his massive inferiority complex of being a slave, and you see that being expressed in the necrophilia and the idea of being with her, that he felt like he'd be rejected and he needed someone who couldn't reject him. But the other side isn't as strange, it's still strange, but the other side is saying that he preserved her in order to convince people that he had married this girl. So the question was, what was the reaction? Machlokes says, what was the reaction of Herod to the fall of this girl, to the killing of this girl? So one possibility was that he kept denying it, and he couldn't accept it, and that's what the necrophilia is. Or the idea is that they're both ideas in a lack of denial. A lack of acceptance of the fact that he wasn't from the Beis Chashmonai. The question is. What did he do after the fact? Was it something that he had to try to destroy his inferiority complex, and by having Bia with the corpse, it was just an affirmation of that idea? Or simply the concept was that he preserved her in order to convince himself that he really was royal, and to convince himself that he really had royal blood. But either way, Herod was a little crazy, and either way, his clear personality trait was really this inferiority complex that had driven his actions, and his inability to rid himself of the sense that he was an Eved deep down inside. So that explains why he's preserving the body and either having relations with it or preserving it so that everybody thinks that he married her. He's trying to, he can't accept the fact that he's really an Eved, and either one's an expression of that. Either he can't accept it, and that's why. And really, he's aware of it, and that's why he's having Bia with her, because she can't reject him for being an Eved. Or the idea is that he's trying to convince himself that he's not an Eved and that he's really a king, and he wants everyone else to know as well. So that's the other side. He wants to convince himself and the people that he's really a king of kingship and from that lineage. And that's why he's so makbid on the halacha, because he really had a tremendous issue with trying to accept his avdus. And he, even though halachically he shouldn't have cared, because he's killing a whole entire family and a whole dynasty of Chashmonaim, nevertheless, you see that he cared. So it shows you that he really was bothered by the fact that he was an Eved, intrinsically. Okay, so one more point. So another question that we had was, what about the Hashgacha? Why was there Hashgacha? So the Ramban on Torah, we're going back to Chumash here a little bit, the Ramban on Torah gives an answer. So it's a famous, I think a relatively famous Ramban, and it's in source number 8. It's going on the idea that the kingship was always supposed to be from the lineage of Yehuda. So he says, V'zeh onesh ha-chashmonayim shemalchu b'vayisheni. So he says that the punishment of the Chashmonaim in the second bias was because of the fact that they were Kohanim and they weren't really entitled to being Melch. Kiyayu chaside elyon. These individuals, the Chashmonaim, were great individuals. Not for the Chashmonaim, the Jews would be lost. And without Torah, they wouldn't have anything. Nevertheless, they were punished in a great way. So all the Chashmonaim brothers who had ruled over the people were all great individuals. And eventually they ended up being killed. And in the end, they were completely wiped out. And they said, anyone who comes from the Beis Chashmonai is an Eved. They were all destroyed because of this oven. Even though in Shimon, the onesh was that the tzidukim came from Shimon. The whole reason for the destruction of the Chashmonaim is because they took on the kingship role and they didn't allow it to go to the Beis David. And they removed the rulership from Yehuda completely, and the onesh was midah k'neged midah, shehim shel kadosh baruch hu aleihem es avdeihem behem echrisum. He allowed the slaves, meaning Herod, to take over and to destroy them. So it's midah k'neged midah. So what is the midah k'neged midah here? What exactly is the reason for such a really strong onesh? What did they do that was so bad? The Ramban himself is basically raising the question, because they're really amazing individuals. They saved the Jewish people from losing Torah. So why exactly were they punished in such a harsh way? So this explains the Hashgacha. This gives a reason for the Hashgacha in the Gemara as to why Herod was told by a Baskol to rise up. Apparently, this was God's will, that at this moment, the Chashmonaim be challenged and they be destroyed. And the whole reason is because they took on the rulership that really belonged to Yehuda. So what exactly was the problem? Can we define it a little bit better? And why is it such a bad onesh? So I think the concept is tied to the fact that Yehuda was appointed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu as being the Shevet in which Malchus was supposed to emerge from. And the whole idea is that Yehuda had earned it. He basically showed, based on his personality traits and the personality traits that would seem to be inculcated into the Shevet, that they would have the proper personalities to be malachim. But still, I mean, it's still, why is it such a harsh onesh for the Chashmonaim? So I've heard other reasons. I think the Rav had an idea that there was a checks and balances idea that you shouldn't mix Kohen being a Kohen and being a Melech. But I don't think the Ramban's saying that necessarily, because he's just saying by the very fact that They took it away from Yehuda. It could have been any Shevet, but the fact that they took it away from Yehuda is why they were punished so harshly. So I think the idea is that Yehuda and kingship coming from Yehuda was part of the concept that God is ordaining or allowing for Malchus in general. And the whole idea of Malchus in the framework of man is that Malchus only emerges through or from a recognition that there is no Malchus and that the real Melech is God. And the Malchus of man is really just a means of recognizing the Malchus Hashem, but there is no real Malchus in this world. It's not a real, it's not like the Malchus of Hashem. It's not a real kingship. So maybe the idea, the concept is that when you take the Malchus away from Yisrael, from Yehuda, who was given the Malchus by God, you're basically saying that the Malchus exists apart from God, that Malchus exists per se on its own. And once you say that, and once you demonstrate that, by being a Melech Yisrael, without the permission of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, without Hashem allowing it to be so, or without Hashem saying you're the Shevet to be the Melech, so now you're creating an institution of Malchus apart from God. And when you do that, it ends up creating a distortion in the idea of Malchus, and it ends up creating an idea or concept that man is great, that man has intrinsic Malchus. And that's really against the philosophical concept that the true Melech is only God, is only Hashem. So that's why the onesh was so strong and so harsh, because the nature of the flaw was such that even though these individuals were instrumental in saving the Jewish people and saving the Mikdash, nevertheless, what they did was that they created a Malchus apart from Malchus Hashem. And the reason they did that, or how they did that, was by removing it from Yehuda. So once they did that, they were worthy and worthy of being destroyed. And it played itself out through Herod, the Eved, the one who's lowly, the one who's who's really not important, the person who has the inferiority complex. He's the one who destroyed the Malchus, basically showing you that there is no Malchus, that Malchus isn't real. There's no reality to the Malchus, and a king can be destroyed, a human king, but not the Malchus Hashem. Malchus Hashem is intrinsically different. So I think that explains the Baskel and why Herod was the one who was in charge of or led to the destruction of the Chashmonaim, and why their destruction was so harsh and so permanent. But before you give up on Herod, don't give up on him. There's actually a good ending, somewhat, to the story. It starts off bad, but it gets a little bit better at the end. So we're just going to go on in the Gemara and try to analyze the second part of the story. So the second part is, it keeps getting worse before it gets better. So it says, Amar, he said, on the second page, source number 9, Amar, Man Dorish Mikarev Achecha Tosim Alecha Melech. Who created the drasha, or who is Dorish, that you can only have a melech that from the Jewish people? So Rabbanon, it's the rabbis. They're responsible for making sure that I can't be king. Come, Katlinu, a legitimate king. Come, Katlinu lechudu Rabbanon. So he killed all the rabbis. And Shavke leBava ben Buta. He left this one rabbi, Bava ben Buta, leMishgal Eitzamine, because he wanted somebody, an advisor, and he found that Bava ben Buta was the perfect advisor. So he left him alone. He saved his life. So Ahadarle Klila Daili Nakrinu Leine. So he made him a wreath or a crown of porcupine hide, and it was supposed to be put on his head and basically covered his eyes, and it ends up ripping his eyes out. This is Bava ben Buta. So he blinded Bava ben Buta. So he seems like a really terrible person, Herod. Yom Echad Asa V'Yosef Kameh. So one day, Herod tries to play undercover boss here, and he sits with Bava ben Buta, who's blind, and he says, and he pretends like he's not the king. So Amar Chazi Mar Hai Avda Bisha Maika Avid. So he says, do you see what this terrible slave, meaning referring to Herod, what he's doing, what he's doing with the Malchus, with the kingship? So he's trying to test Bava ben Buta and see how he responds. So Bava ben Buta was a smart cookie, and he says, Amar Le, my Avid Le, what did he do? Or what can I do to him? So Amar Le, Nilti Yamar. So Herod said, why don't you curse the king, curse Herod? So Amar Le, he said, Ksiv, it says in the Torah, Gam Madacha Melech Al Tekalel. So you're not allowed to curse the king. So Amar Le, so he said, Hai Lav Melechu, he's not really a king. So why don't you curse him? So Amar Le, Velihavi Asher Ba'alma, so even if he's, Bava ben Buta says he may just be a rich man, but nevertheless, you're not allowed to curse a rich man. So velo yehe el nasi, so maybe he's just a nasi, just a president, a leader. So Bava ben Buta said, no, you can't curse him because he's a nasi, and the Torah says you're not allowed to curse a nasi. Amar le, he's trying to trick him, obviously. Amar le, but osem maisa amcha, vahai lav osem maisa amcha. This guy's not keeping the Torah. So Amar Le, Mistafina Mine. So Bava ben Buta said, I'm scared of Herod, this king. So Amar Le, Leka Inish, Da Azil, Dilema Le, Da Antva Atya Sivna. So he says to Bava ben Buta, nobody's going to tell if you tell me what you really think about Herod, because it's just us two, and we're the only ones here. So this is a good answer. So he says, 1 second, I just lost the place. So he says, no, like the word spreads through the birds, and word travels, and I'm not going to say, because I'm scared, I'm not going to say what I really think. So he recognized, Bava ben Buta recognized that, you know, that this stuff gets out, and I'm not gonna say anything bad. So Amar Le, Anahu, I hava yadana dizahari rabbanan kule hai lo vaketlina luhu. So Herod said, it's me, I'm the king, I'm Herod, and if I had known that the Rabbanan would be so loyal and they would never badmouth me, then I would have never killed them in the first place. So Hashda Maita Kante Dahu Gavra. So he said to Bava ben Buta, how am I supposed to fix this? I just killed all these Chazal. how am I supposed to fix this problem? Because he recognized that he was wrong, that Chazal would be loyal to him and they would never rat him out and never put him down. So he said, Amar Leh, Hu Kava Oro Shel Olam, Dichsiv Kiner Mitzvah Torah Or. So he, Herod, destroyed the light of the world, which is Torah. Yelech, because he killed the Chazal. Yelech V'yasok V'or Shel Olam. So now his job is to be involved in the aura of the world. Dichsiv V'naru Elav Kol Goya. So it's a reference to the Mikdash, that all the Goyim's eyes will be lit up. Ika da Amri, or will be lit. Ika da Amri, Hachi Amar Leh, Hu Sima Eino Shel Olam. Some say that Bava Ben Buta said to Herod, he's the one who blinded the eyes of the world, meaning Chazal. So now he should go and be involved in the eyes of the world. So it says that, again, he should be involved in the Mikdash. So that's what he does. So he says, Amar Leh, just the last part of the story, Amar Leh Mistafina Mimachusa, I'm afraid of the Romans. That's what Herod said, because he was dependent on them. Amar Leh Shadar Shlicha, Velezel Shasa, Veliakiv Shasa, Lahadar Shasa, Adahachi Vahachi, Staris Uvanis Leh. So he said, send a messenger to Rome to wait there for a long time. And in the meantime, you should destroy the Mikdash and rebuild it so it's more beautiful. Avar Hachi, he did that. Herod actually rebuilt the Mikdash. Shalchu Leh, Imlos Asarta, Altistor. So the response from Rome was, if you didn't destroy it, don't destroy it. V'im Sasarta, Altivni. But if you did destroy it, don't rebuild it. V'im Satarta Uvanisa, but if you destroyed it and rebuilt it, which is what he did, Avdi Bisha Basar de Avdin Mismalchin, you're a bad servant because you did something without getting permission. Im Zayincha Alach Sifrcha Khan, even if you think you're a king, we know you're not. Lo Racha Velo Baracha, you're not a king at all, and you're not the son of a king. Hurdus Avda Kalinya Mis Avid, you're just a slave. So find my raka machusa dechsev anochi yom rach mashof melch v'ibaisema mehacha v'ayikru l'fnav avreich. Then the last says Amri mishlo ra binyan hordos lo ra binyan na'em yamav. So anyone who saw the building of hordos of the mikdash never saw a beautiful building in their lives. So we go back to the last part of the story here. So Herod, he kills off Chazal, then he has this one aide of his Bava ben Buta. He tries to he blinds him, then he tries to trick him. But he finds out that Bava ben Buta wouldn't do that. So what ends up happening is that he regrets killing Chazal, and he wants to do tshuva. He wants to do something to fix it. And Bava ben Buta basically says to be involved in the Mikdash, and by being involved in the Mikdash, he'll get some type of kapara, some sense of kapara. And the end of the story is that really he gave up his malchus Herod, and he forfeited it by doing this without the permission of the Romans, but he did succeed in rebuilding the Mikdash, and the beauty of the Mikdash was expressed in the time of Herod. So the only question, there's a lot of questions, but the one question I want to answer is, what's the machlokas, the two sides that Bava ben Buta was saying? One was that either you destroyed Or, so you should go and be involved in Or, which is Mikdash, or you blinded the eyes, and therefore you should be involved in Machmar Einechem, which is the wonder of your eyes. So what's the machlokas there between the two ways of learning, and how did his involvement in Mikdash act as a kapara and a tshuva for what he had done to destroy the Chachamim? So for this answer, I just want to rely a little bit on the Marsha again, in source number 12, and then we'll try to define it a little bit. Hu kava nero, nero lefaresh, dahachi ka'amar, Devade Efshar Limso Eider Haor Velo Einayim Kigon Adam Pikeach Belaila VeEider Einayim Velo Or Kigon Suma Biyom. So there's situations where a person can have their eyes, but it could be dark and they can't see. And there's situations where you lack your eyes, but it's light outside, like a Suma in the daytime, like a blind person in the daytime. Avalkanaya Eider Shnei Matora Shia Or VaTamuchacham Shema Einayim. So there's two aspects that were destroyed. One is Torah, which is compared to Or, and the other is the Talmud Chacham, which is compared to the eyes. Ulezeh Amar Leh, so this is what Bava ben Buta was saying to him, she'i efshar l'cha l'sakein shneim. You can't fix both. Vezeh lashon l'lashon rishon, according to the first lashon, Amar Leh, she'tisakein ha'or, that you should fix the Or, the Torah, ki gam beis hamikdash hu oro shel olam, k'neamar kimitzion titei sarah, because the beis hamikdash is called light, as it says, from Sion, Torah goes out. And then the other side is of all either einayim v'gufo shel tamu chacham yevshar l'chol ha'asir. The other way is saying you can't return the bodies and the eyes of the chacham v'loshon sheni, and you can't do that. Sorry, that's the first side. V'loshon sheni amaleisha either einayim ata tzake, and you can fix the eyes. Ki amikdash shetivne hu einayim tachas hatamu chacham. The mikdash will be the eyes instead of the tamu chacham shekatalta that you killed. Avala or shiat Torah shekavisa v'misas hatamu chacham yevshar l'chol ha'asir b'vinyano. But the or, the light, you can't fix by working on the mikdash. So what are these two sides? What's the einayim and the or that the Gemara is mentioning? What are these two aspects? So the first way of learning according to the Marsha is saying that there's an aspect that you can't fix, which is the fact that you destroyed the einayim, but you can fix the or. You can be involved in mikdash, and that fixes the or. And the other way is saying, no, that you can't fix the or, but you can fix the einayim. So what is the or and what is the einayim? What's going on here? So this is the last point of the shir. So I think the first way is learning that the Torah, both ways are learning that the Torah's or. What does that mean? Torah's or is that the Torah enlightens man, just like or gives clarity to a person. So too, the Torah has the capacity to clarify a man's mind and man's ideas and man's thought process. And the mikdash functions in that way. So when a person goes to mikdash and they see certain ideas about Hashem and Hashgacha and how it works, so they're enlightened and their idea of God is clarified. But what's the einayim? So the einayim, there's two ways to learn the einayim. One is that the einayim is that Chazal, they understood how to present ideas and in what way to present it. And they had a creativity in terms of discerning, because einayim also means forethought. Like it says what's that pasuk? It says, can't remember the pasuk offhand, but einayim means forethought also. It means like thinking ahead and seeing ahead, seeing the future. So what was lacking, what he killed, was the ability to discern how to represent the ideas and when it would be appropriate to present certain ideas to people. And that you can't get back because he killed the Chazal and they had the capacity to do that. But the Torah, the ideas themselves could still be promulgated through the rebuilding of the mikdash, and that's what he was involved in. So by rebuilding the mikdash, he allowed the mikdash to function and clarify the ideas to anyone who visited. But what was missing was the einayim, the forethought as to how to present knowledge and to whom to present knowledge. The other way is learning the opposite, that really the or was gone, but the einayim was preserved through the mikdash. So what's that? What's that idea? So perhaps there's another way to learn, that really the or is the knowledge itself, and Chazal that he killed, they had unique knowledge, they had unique svaras, they had unique theory, they had unique concepts, and that was lost. That can't be regained. But the mikdash is the einayim. The mikdash, what it means einayim is that it draws people in, that people, when they see the mikdash, like it says in the pasuk, machmad einechem, it's like the glory of your eyes. The mikdash was built in such a beautiful way that it's meant to draw the eyes in. It's meant to draw a person into mikdash in order to grasp the beauty of it and really understand the ideas. So before that, the point is that Chazal were the ones that really brought people into Torah, and they were the ones who were capable of drawing people into the ideas and the knowledge of Torah. And the mikdash now functioned in that way, and Herod was able to get kapara and do tshuva by fixing up the mikdash so that it would function as, like the Rambam says, as a place that would instill an awe in people who visited it. And it was the einayim, it drew people in. People wanted to see it. But what was lost was the knowledge itself. The actual knowledge of Chazal and their creativity and their svaras was lost. So it's a machlokas as to what Herod could get kapara for. Could he get kapara by reintroducing the concepts of mikdash par excellence by rebuilding the mikdash? Or was the idea that he got kapara through rebuilding the mikdash and it functioning to bring people in and to instill awe, which is the idea of einayim? But there was an aspect, the point of the Marsha is that he couldn't do tshuva to the utmost, and there would always be something lacking in his destruction of Chazal, but he was given an opportunity to fix a part of what was destroyed, and he went about doing so. So it turns out somewhat good, but still he did kill Chazal and he did blind Bava Ben Buta, but the ending is kind of a good ending. So let's summarize this year and then up for questions, if anybody has questions, or you could just ask me now. So up till now, we started with Herod. I don't want to go through the whole history of Herod again, but basically we see from Herod this weird story that he gets a bas kol to destroy the household of the Chashmonaim, and there's this one girl that he wants to be with, and she ends up killing herself, so he ends up preserving her body in honey in order to either be involved in necrophilia with her or to just preserve her so that everyone knows that he, or thinks that he married the queen, the daughter of the Melech, sorry, the daughter of the princess. And then also, he insisted on marrying her because he didn't feel like he was, it says that he wanted to be Meshachar from his Avdas, and he was now her Evet. So it's a strange point, meaning why does he care so much? I mean, he obviously doesn't care about halacha. He's killing people. He's killing Chashmonaim. So we said that the whole idea of this Gemara is showing you the inferiority aspect of Herod. One aspect is that he had to convince people that he wasn't a slave, and he told his sons to tell people that he was from the Chashmonaim and that they were from the Chashmonaim. And he also needed to see himself as being legitimately freed because he couldn't deal with the fact that he was an Eved. And then the preservation of the body was either because a demonstration of his lack of self-esteem, which is the idea of necrophilia, because it's an idea of being with someone who can't reject you, and that's the self-esteem of an Eved, that deep down inside he was completely inferior, or it's just simply the idea that he wanted to convince himself and others and make them think that he was actually king and that he had Chashmonai lineage in him. And then the second idea was, why was it such a harsh onesh? So he said that it's because the avdus tied to Yehuda was based on the permission of Hashem, and when you remove it from that permission, now you create an institution of avdus of malchus on its own. Excuse me, and malchus on its own is really a distortion of the idea of man's power and man's real inability to be a true king. Then finally, the last idea was Herod and his tshuva, and he said that Herod was involved in the rebuilding of the mikdash, and he did preserve and did get kapara for his act of destroying Chazal. But he wasn't able to get full kapara. He got partial kapara. And the way he did that was by rebuilding the mikdash and making it beautiful. And by making it beautiful, either he was able to clarify, people were either attracted to it now, or it was the idea that now the mikdash could function to its full capacity to give off and to promulgate ideas about Hashgacha and about God's uniqueness and God's oneness. Okay, so if anybody has any questions, please.